Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and very big apologies for the delay to those of you who are watching live. I see in the live comments here that we've already got people talking about watermelon jam, which sounds really fun. Sorry we're late. We were supposed to have Herman on the show today, but he appears to have had some sort of tech problem. And so Michael Morris has very bravely and nobly decided to jump in and help us out on the show today. So, Michael, thanks for coming on today. Really appreciate you coming at short notice.
Pleasure. Always nice to join you.
And also joining us today is Mr. Tiego Tsotse. Tiego, how are you doing, man?
Good, things, and how are you, Nick? Good afternoon, Mr. Michael, sir. Good afternoon to the viewers as well.
I am a little bit stressed from the technical snafu, but apart from that, I am very good. But you know what's not so good? The crime rate. And we had some quarterly crime statistics come out. Contact crimes, which is the ones that people I think are most concerned about, are up by 18.5%, according to the police statistics. Murder is up 13.6%. Attempted murder is up by 19.4%. Common assault up by 19.5%. Sexual offenses, those being things like rape, sexual assault, attempted sexual offenses, up by 11%. Truck hijackings up. Car hijackings up. Robbery of cash and transit up. Robbery at residential premises is up. Robbery at non-residential premises is up by about 8%, the two robbery ones. Really, really bad news. And I haven't fully checked this myself, but there's now some saying that we're pretty much back to at least some of the crime levels of the 1990s, which is anyone who was an adult back then, which does not include me because I was too young, will probably remember was a pretty bad time for crime overall in this country, particularly murder. So bad news all around. However, the city of Cape Town claims that it is a light in the darkness here. They claim that their LEAP program, which has seen essentially local law enforcement officers that the city has been putting into its most crime-affected areas, have managed to push several parts of the city's violent crime rates down in the same period that they've gone up across a lot of the country. So according to the city of Cape Town, over the 12-month period, Guguletu has noted a 30% decrease in murder over the same period, and Delft has seen a 17.4% decrease in murder. The mayor of Cape Town, Jordan Hill Lewis, claims that this shows that the decentralization of powers on policing work and that we should adopt this model of decentralized police powers more broadly across the entire country, where everyone will be able to adapt their police services to more favor local conditions rather than the centralized South African police service that we've currently been living with. Tiego, what do you make of the story? The first thing is, I guess, you know, does this sound plausible to you? And what you know, should we embrace this call for the decentralization of the police?
Well, I think it's very much plausible. It's already happening in the Western Cape at the Cape Town municipality, as it's stated in the article. I think it's something that can certainly be done at both local government level and provincial level. Powers could be spread back down to closer to the people, you know, bring them back to the local government, bring them back to the provincial government. It's easier anyway to hold officials accountable at that level if they are not working. So at local government level, if we have police here, they're not doing their job, as citizens of the local municipality here can easily go there and hold them to account. If it's at province level as well, it's easy to hold them to account. But more than anything, it's helpful because when you have a centralized government and it's a failing government, then you have police that have been centralized, the police are failing at that level, all of us bear the brunt of that heat. Whereas if it's decentralized, then if you have one municipality not doing its job, it's the people of that particular area who are struggling with that and can easily get rid of that government later on, bring a new one, or have a strong civil society sector that can hold them directly to account at that level, not be told about the minister budgets that have been dealt with at a national level and stuff of that nature. So I think generally, it's a good idea, and it's something very much possible, and will assist with holding politicians and government workers to account more closely to us as residents on the ground.
So, Michael, you're a citizen of Cape Town. Firstly, I don't know if you've interacted at all with the LEAP program or maybe seen them about. What's your take on this decentralization stuff? I mean, do you agree that you think it can have the results here that the mayorship of Cape Town claims that it has managed to have so far?
I think so. And I think for exactly the reasons that Diego has enumerated here, it's the closeness to the community, it's the accountability. It's also police who are in touch with the issues particular to their communities. Here in Cape Town, we often hear of the reality of apartheid spatial planning. It's very much an issue, I think, in Cape Town, as it is elsewhere in the country, but it might even be a bit more acute. Acute here, and the minute you begin to look at it more closely, you realize that different communities have very, very different issues. Sitting here in Claremont, I can feel perfectly safe, but I know that I travel just 2.5, 3, 4 kilometers to the what would it be southeast, and I'd be living in another country. It's almost like crossing from one country into another. And people have very different problems. The crime rates is very different. The vulnerability to crime is different, and the solutions I think are also very different. And
not right, and in some cases you have like social dysfunction, maybe drink, alcohol, drugs causing problems, and in another place it's gangs that are the problem, right?
Exactly. And I think in each particular case, if you have policing that is responsive to those issues. And accountable to those communities, you're going to immediately see the advantage of that and have improvements. I happened to see the comment a little earlier from one of our listeners, from Jay Nokia, who says, Yania, if only those figures were relating to our GDP. And of course, the sad fact is, we know that when the economy declines, when people are desperate, they're poor, there's greater poverty, there's more vulnerability, and so on, crime will inevitably increase. People it's not just desperation of good people, it's opportunities that arise for criminal activity. So we are, in fact, looking at the symptom of a much, much bigger issue. But certainly in terms of policing, I agree with Teho, the local a solution seeking is I think the way to go.
So I think looking at the last 30 years of governance, the two things that you can really say, particularly in the last 10 years, where the ANC has really badly stumbled, is one, unemployment, but two is the fact that SAPS has become a very dysfunctional organization. It is I think, it continues to be the least trusted national institution in the country, I believe, with less than 30% of South Africans having much faith in the police. There's even a question as to how much underreporting there is of our crime stats, considering the fact that lots of South Africans really just don't bother because they don't think that anything will happen. And you don't want to go to a police station where some police officer is probably just going to be fairly rude to you, make you fill in a whole bunch of forms, and kind of treat you like a piece of dirt when you've just been a victim of crime. And I think this is particularly true of poorer South Africans who, they get mugged of their cell phone and they say, well, what's the point of reporting it? I don't have insurance. No one's going to pay out, whatever. So there's obviously an ideological point here about whether you think that we should have a centralized or decentralized police force. But I think that even those who are a bit wary of decentralized police forces should at least kind of think to themselves, well, we're in a pretty bad state at the moment. Maybe it's worth just trying something else just to see if decentralized police forcing works, because fixing the SAPs is going to take a long time and a lot of effort. And in the meantime, if we can get some sort of local police forces holding back the tide of crime, I think it would go a long way to fixing problems. Tiego, any final thoughts on this topic?
No, my final thoughts relate to what Michael spoke about. The fact that as stuff such as unemployment rates go up, obviously crime will go up as well. The more you have, the more poor people, more people you have in absolute poverty and stuff of that nature, the more people you'll have being tempted and going into crime and stuff of that nature. So I think we really do need a government that can address the economic question in South Africa. How do we grow the economy? How do we ensure that we create sustainable jobs? How do we ensure that we leave a South Africa to those who will come after this generation that is healthy and can be sustained? I think that's what we really need. And moving into 2024, I hope that the viewers will really go on, read through the manifestos of the parties and everything, see what their offers is, and based on what they have to offer and what they think that could do for us moving forward as a nation.
Oh, definitely. All right, let us move to Johannesburg, a city which has had much troubled governance over the last couple of months, with votes of no confidence and then court decisions reversing votes of no confidence and sort of an anti-ANC coalition going out of power and then back into power. And it looks like next year there will be another vote of no confidence. It doesn't look as though anything has been agreed. The ANC and its potential allies in the EFF and such appear not to have been able to draw up a deal for getting rid of the DA mayor, Paul Palatse, and Joburg for this year. So from what I've heard, the vote of no confidence is probably only going to happen next year rather than at the end of this year, which is what was expected. So the DA has got a little bit of a life lease on life, along with their coalition partners in Action SA, Freedom Front Plus, ACDP, IFP, etc. But the challenges before them that have been caused by some of this disruption are quite immense. So we've recently heard in the last couple of days of some very big problems with Joburg's administration. Well, the first problem is not as big, but still pretty embarrassing, which was a story we didn't cover yesterday, that apparently a large number of Johannesburg Metropolitan Police Department's vehicles were not licensed. And a motorist learned this when he was being given a ticket for an expired license disc. he noticed that the police officers giving him the ticket were driving a car without the right license. And that was apparently due to the administrative number or something that's used to license these things being blocked by the National Traffic Department. So that's a bit of a mess to start off with. But we've got another problem, which is that AFRI Rent, who rents a lot of vehicles to the city of Johannesburg, says that the contract it had signed with the city was not renewed at the end of October. And while it has been, in its words, very patient with the city, it's now going to be pulling its fleet. Now, I did see a news report that apparently there's been some sort of last-minute intervention which may have stopped this. But the potential is that all of the Johannesburg Metropolitan Police Department's patrol cars, as well as transportation vehicles used to transport, for example, pick it up workers to the sort of garbage sites from their homes, will not be operational. And it looks like the contract was not renewed in kind of the end of October when the city was busy changing hands. Michael, what do you make of this? I mean, it's just quite an interesting example of the real costs of having a very unstable government, right? Which is that no one is kind of got their eye on the ball on this one.
Indeed. I mean, you know, one thinks of that much abused, I think, Chinese proverb, may you live in interesting times. And I think we certainly do. And perhaps it's a South African condition, has been for an awfully long time, that life is always interesting here. And that, you know, at the very point at which we begin to just see a future in which stuff does work better and there's a prospect of change, at any rate, the change is coming through the coalition politics and so on, which is itself very very disruptive and unstable. So, but here's a perfect example of the risks of the politics being the all-consuming objective and the administration suffering as a result, and people just overlooking such elementary things as, you know, making sure that contracts are signed and things are sort of moving on from month to month. A kind of reminder, in a way, in a sense, of the cost of the politics that we've been living with for far too long. We've all just settled down into a pattern which, you know, now requires changing, and we suddenly realize how much we actually need to pay attention to detail and things that are going wrong and so on. So, yeah, so discomforting reality, but it, I suppose it goes with what it means to be part of a changing society, which I think is what we are at the moment.
No, definitely. And I really agree with the sort of attention to detail point, which is that not just from a governance side, but also from the side of people watching what's going on. Because when you have such confusing, complicated, messy politics, it's very tempting to just throw up your hands and go, oh, well, you know, all politicians are all rubbish, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's all pointless. It's all a waste of time. But if you look into the details here, you're probably going to find quite quickly that there is someone to blame. And yes. Those people should be held to account. It's not just a case of, oops, you know, we were dealing with other things. We forgot about this. It was probably someone who really should have taken the time to actually deal with it. Now, I don't know in this case whether it was the ANC or the anti-ANC coalition, but it's still something worth considering. And I think the residents of Joburg should pay close attention to these kind of developments, hear what the two sides have to say for themselves, and make their decision in 2024 based off of those kind of things. Tiako, what do you make of this whole mess?
No, and I agree with you, Nick, that someone probably should have done their job before the contract came to an end at the end of October, because the local government, the local government financial year starts in July, so they've had between July and the end of October to deal with this. And I would imagine that they must have made quotations and everything in the past financial year while planning for this financial year, so they know exactly how much they'll be spending on this and everything. So by July, August, everything should have been sorted already. So I think it's disappointing that they got to the end of October without this contract having been signed. And I don't think we can solely blame it on the political situation. I think between July and October, really, something should have been done, since it's something that should have been planned for starting last year in the last financial year.
That's definitely something to keep in mind. Michael, any final thoughts just before we move on?
I mean, I think that's a very important point you raise. I get quite exasperated when I hear people saying, "Ah, politicians are all rubbish. We can just ignore them." The fact is, we depend on politicians for overseeing the administration of very ordinary, everyday things. You know,
traffic. We can't actually abolish politicians.
No. And it's actually up to us also to be present, and correct. You know, to be attentive, to be alert, to play our part in making the society work. It's so easy just to dismiss the kind of structure of society which we've chosen to have, and then claim that we have no role to play in it, when in fact we have a central role. So I think that's a very important point.
Definitely. Speaking of bad planning, as Tiako alluded to here, there is a big problem at ESCOM. Now, yes, I know that's not news to anyone listening, but there is a specific big problem at ESCOM right now. We did cover it on the show, which is that ESCOM has run out of money for their open cycle gas turbines, which are diesel powered massive generators, which help to supplement. They're supposed to only be used in emergencies. They help to supposed to supplement the grid because of the enormous amount of load shedding that's been going on. ESCOM has been running these things pretty much permanently, and as a result, within 7 months of the financial year, blew through their whole budget of 11 billion rand for the diesel. Well, government has decided that it is going to step in here to rescue the situation by ordering Petro SA to make 50 million liters of diesel available to ESCOM, which, according to an analyst who was consulted for, I think it was Business Day story on this, said that that's going to last about 2 weeks. So, shall we say, not a long-term solution. If they continue, that is, if they run the open cycle gas turbines at full capacity for about 5 to 6 hours a day, which wouldn't be particularly unusual. Praveen Gordhan, in a reply to a question from the DA MP Khalid Kachalia, said that the diesel will be made available immediately. Some of it will reach the open cycle gas turbines via pipeline, which should be pretty easy to do. But some of it's going to have to be trucked to the other locations. And that creates logistical problems, that creates a potential for things to go wrong, that creates a potential for delays in a big way. So just because it's been made available doesn't mean it's actually going to necessarily arrive. Then we've got the larger problem here, which is that according to Eskom, they warned government back in June that they were going to run out of money for diesel. And apparently nothing was done. Maybe government thought, oh, well, Eskom's going to have to find the money. But regardless, we're now stuck with a situation where no one has even ordered new diesel supplies to be brought into the country from overseas. So it's not entirely clear where, if we're going to keep these things running to reduce load shedding, we're going to, you know, we may have to wait a while for the new stuff to be delivered. And this is once again an example of a management by crisis. You don't do anything, you ignore the warning signs, you, as Minister Pravin Gordhan accused DA leader John Steenhuisen of yesterday, of politicizing the issue of Eskom. I'm not quite sure what else John Steenhuisen is supposed to do, but anyway, regardless. Because we're sort of sitting now with this problem where no one has done anything until the crisis point happens, we're going to have to wait even longer, because that means that now suddenly, oh, okay, I guess now we'll make the order if we can find the money somewhere. Michael, I'm exasperated. Can you give some reason, sensibility to my exasperation?
I don't know if I can. I mean, I think the whole country is, you know, just looks on with wondering if it could ever be even more amazed than it already is. And this is just one of those things. I mean, just the scale of the thing is really what is staggering. I mean, 50 million liters of diesel, the cost of that is staggering. But to think that that's just going to provide us with 2 weeks of electricity generation, I mean, that, you know, it really does bring home to one the ultimate cost of the failure of this SOE.
As I understand, you know, running the gas cycle turbines is the difference between load shedding stage 4 and load shedding stage 2. So it does make a difference, but even then, it's still not enough.
It doesn't, yes, it's not the solution. So it is, it is exasperating. And it is, how fatuous for Gordhan to tell anyone not to politicize it. I think politicizing it is actually is the only solution, really, which we know. It's not going to be an easy one. The more we see these sorts of things, the more we realize how big an obstacle we need to get over eventually in 2024 thereafter, when we get a new kind of administration and begin rebuilding all this stuff. It's going to be a mammoth task. It's going to take quite a while. It's politicizing it. That is actually what's necessary.
Yeah. And I have a particular axe to grind here with Pravin Gordhan, because he, for a brief time, due to his opposition to Jacob Zuma, managed to get this reputation as being some sort of a hero. I even heard a speech by Helen Ziller, where she didn't call him a hero, but she did praise him. That was back in the sort of I think it was 2016, 2017, somewhere around there. But as our colleague Gabriel Krauser has gone at lengths to point out, Pravin Gordhan, our finance minister, decimated possibly one of the best legacies of the Mbeki presidency, which was our healthy state finances. And I think he has left a trail of destruction pretty much everywhere he's gone, right? He's been responsible for a lot of the supposed rescuing of SAA, which continues to be a complete mess. I was going to use some different phrases there. And he has just utterly failed to do anything to properly repair Eskom. If anything, the situation continues to deteriorate at the same rate during the Zuma years. So what's the point of having a supposed honest communist if his incompetence means that he's just the same as the more corrupt elements of the ruling party? Diego, do you agree with me in my assessment of Gordhan?
Well, I agree with you entirely, Nixe. And I must say that it's shocking that he says that opposition parties must not politicize this. But the reality is that Eskom, being the only player in the market that can provide citizens with electricity, is a very political decision that was taken by the African National Congress. That thing has already been politicized. The free market has already been interfered with. So it, I don't think he necessarily understands what he's talking about. If anything, we need to get the politics out of that market, open up the market so we can have private companies, private companies competing to sell electricity to us as citizens. Citizens can then get to choose who they want to buy the electricity for. But of course, you have mentioned before, Nick, that this is a solution for what, the next 10 or 15 years time, something that would be implemented then. We now need immediate solutions that can assist now. But I must say that it's shocking that we in 2 weeks, the whole nation could spend something close to 50 million liters of diesel. I think it's a crisis. I think it's a disaster. As many people as possible who can get off grid should get off grid. As many people as possible who can get a bit of solar and that and that and that. I think many of us should start doing that, because clearly Eskom has failed and they are not going to fix their story anytime soon. So we should start trying to find the solutions in our own lives. Our lives can't stop because of their incompetencies. Businesses can't stop because of their incompetencies. Where it's possible, we should start as citizens trying to find those ways of coming up with immediate solutions to our immediate crisis and our immediate surroundings. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. All right, let us go sort of overseas, but still related to South Africa for our last story here. And this is about the visit of President Cyril Ramaphosa to the UK, where he was meeting with UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. But as on top of that, he's also been meeting with King Charles III. And I think he gave a speech as well to the British Parliament. Now, I've heard conflicting reports on how this was received. While there was a standing ovation and applause, there was apparently also some people who were sort of a bit grumpy with the fact that he basically just came to the UK to ask for money. There were others, however, who were very praising of Ramaphosa, who said that he has restored Mandela's vision to South Africa, and they congratulated him on the fact that we had won the Rugby World Cup with a black captain recently, and this shows that the country is really making great strides and towards healing the divisions of the past. And I mean, I agree that that's a great thing that's happened to our country in the relatively recent past, but I'm not really sure how much Cyril has had to do with it. Especially because of the fact that Cyril and his political party continue to sow racial division, specifically for the purposes of mining votes. We can't forget that moment when he was caught telling an old lady, and I think it was Limpopo, that if you don't vote for us, the Boers will come back and take the land. But Michael, the IRR put out a press release very briefly on this today. What does it say? What's the point we're trying to make?
Essentially, what we say, it's as diplomatic as some of the speeches that were made in England this week, but very pointedly so. We begin by saying that we're encouraged by the positive tone of the interactions between our president and British leaders over the course of this week, and this is important and it's significant, chiefly because of Britain's role as a trading partner and our role in our economy. Just some of the figures: direct UK investment in South Africa amounted to some 609 billion, with a further 898 billion in non-direct investment. This is Saab figures from 2020. And the UK accounts for a stunning 40% of all direct investment in South Africa. So a very important player. But we then go on to point out that for this relationship to be expanded on, to be exploited in the healthiest sense, to be made the most of, for the benefit of all South Africans, what we need to do is to focus on the things that are standing in the way of investment, standing in the way of economic development and prosperity and optimism and so on. And those are ANC policies, expropriation without compensation, the employment equity bill that imposes all sorts of racial quotas and penalties and so on, and burdens on business. Remove these things and we can make so much more of this positive relationship we have with our old trading partner.
Tieko, very briefly before we close up for the week, your thoughts on this?
Well, I'll be very brief. I agree absolutely with what Michael has just said now. You remove race, you put skills forward, you have more companies, more departments, more state-owned agencies progressing because competent people are the front there. If you have such entities progressing and stuff like that. You have more investments coming into the country and stuff of that nature. The economy grows, more jobs come, you create more of an environment where people can invest and stuff of that nature. So the reality is that these policies have resulted in a lot of incompetent people, for example, getting into government departments. Government departments are failing entirely, or to a large extent, really. Government departments, municipalities, because you have people hired simply because they are black on the basis of their race, skin, color of their skin, as opposed to their skills and stuff of that nature. I think we'll extend more on this another time, because I'm trying to speak fast so as to keep the time, but it's hitting me. But in conclusion, get rid of BEE. Empower people with skills. If you do want to empower people, let them then compete for jobs. Then you'll have a working country that way.
And all I can say to the people of the UK is Cyril is very charming. I think that he is quite a talented politician, but don't fall for it. The guy has some really bad ideas and he keeps pushing them on all of us here at home. But anyway, that's all I have to say about that. And that's all we have to say about that. We will be back next week on the Daily Fade Show. We hope that you found the show interesting. And next week will be our last week for the year. Wednesday will be our last episode for the year. So do tune in next week to get your fill of Daily Friend for the rest of the year. Anyway, cheers, everyone, and have a great weekend.